hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 128 of the No Better Than Average show. I'm here with my co-host, Jacob. Jacob, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Todd. I just got back from a fun little family mini vacation on the beautiful shores of Lake Michigan. And we are, in theory, rested and recuperated from the daily grind of life. But yeah, it's been good, and had a chance to spend some time with the family. That's always fun. And
did you stop in Munster, the Three Floyds Brew Pub?
No, our route did not take us that direction. We went straight up the middle of the state, basically. Yeah, I didn't even drink any fancy beer while we were there. I had some Angry Orchard on draft, but that was as fancy and exotic as it got.
It tastes pretty good on draft.
It does, but I didn't drink any like local micro brews or anything like that. I did try to drink a local craft cider, but okay. They did not have that. They had Angry Orchard instead. And they had a bunch of things that said IPA after them that all had like the little local indicator. And knowing that I'm not a big fan of hops, I decided to pass those up for the fruity refreshment that is a cider. But yeah, it was good. Did you do anything fun or memorable? I know it's been a couple of weeks since we've been on here. Father's Day has come and gone. Anything fun from your end?
Nothing much on Father's Day. My wife gave me the nice gift of taking our daughter to a Girl Scout camp overnight for the weekend. So it was just me and the boy. So that was a pretty relaxing, enjoyable weekend. And then we got out this weekend, enjoyed the mild weather, had a neighborhood block party last night. We even ended up getting the fire pit going for my brother-in-law's house. And what do we do today? My parents came down to celebrate my daughter's 8th birthday.
Cool.
Yep, she just turned 8. And that means she doesn't have to have a car seat anymore in the state in which we reside.
My daughter's just about a year, maybe not even a year, maybe a half a year behind your daughter. And is she 8 going on like 35? Because my daughter sometimes has just the worst, like, I don't know where kids get these attitudes from. Just like eye rolling, you are the dumbest person on the planet voice. Like just, is a sound that is regularly uttered about our house.
I've heard that sound before, but that's mostly when I start singing. So other than that, she actually has a pretty good attitude. She, though, I guess the attitude from my son, you know, is 10. But my daughter is easily distracted. Okay. So you can't really give her more than one or two things at most to do at a time. She's the consummate, you know, she'll be doing something and then a butterfly will fly by.
She'll squirrel off
chasing that. Yes. So, but maybe she's growing out of that now that she's 8 years old. It's possible, right?
You know, I keep waiting for that, you know, multitasking to kick in because we haven't seen that yet here. So hopefully it's just an age thing.
It could be, but you know, two different kids. My son, if you give him a list of 6 things, he just goes right down and ticks it off the list. And his whole goal is to get all the chores done and then play video games. So like, what do I need to do so that I can play video games?
So with your daughter and your wife out of the house, I'm assuming that pants were optional and video games were played.
It's possible that Saturday neither one of us left the house. So, I don't think that we got dressed. I think we were in our pajamas all day. So that was pretty nice.
That sounds good. Yeah, very, very cool.
So sadly, our co-host Jeff is under the weather, so he won't be joining us tonight. But if you would like to call in and leave a comment for us, our call-in line is 317-643-1212. You can seek us out on our Facebook page where we post things occasionally, facebook.com/nobettershow, or send us feedback feedback@nobettershow.com.
Yeah, so we've got a whole handful of things. I saw that listener John had written in and had mentioned that I think this was last week now, depending on when you're listening to it, last week for us, that Harman Kardon announced that they are going to be rolling out a Cortana-powered home speaker later this year named the Invoke. From the pictures I saw, it looks pretty much exactly like an Amazon Echo. They claim that it will offer 360-degree speakers, Skype calling, and smart home control through all voice commands. So, you know, they're claiming to be taking the speaker portion more seriously than Amazon does. They say that this Invoke speaker is going to have 3 woofers and 3 tweeters. And I couldn't really get a good sense from the pictures of how big it is because, I mean, an Amazon Echo is not, you know, tiny. So I don't know where they would, you know, if it's roughly the same size, I don't know, size of like one of those like disinfectant wipe things for those of you that might not have an Amazon Echo, maybe not quite that girthy, but yeah, about that tall. I don't know where they're going to cram the additional speakers in. They do point out that compared to the Echo, it just has a single driver for the woofer and the tweeter. And they are highlighting the ability to make and receive Skype calls to other Skype devices as well as cell phone and landlines through that Microsoft Skype product. They say that this is the first attempt from Microsoft to expand its Cortana assistant away from computers and phones and into a more useful home setting, something that we will hear about in the coming days as the company's Build Developer Conference fast approaches. So they, like I said, they are no word yet on exact release date or pricing, but they plan on shipping the Invoke later this fall. You know, Apple's got the HomePod, which has been getting, I guess, a lot of good press for the way it sounds. Obviously, we've got the Google Play. We've got the Amazon Echo and the Dot. Is this space getting saturated? Is this a Me Too, do you think? Or, like, what do you think of this? I mean, I think Harman Kardon has a pretty good reputation in the audio world.
Yeah, I think saturation is fair for the amount of people that use it. Like, I'm trying to think. I don't think I've been in a house with one, with anything like of this type, although I could be wrong. It's possible I was in a house and, you know, just didn't realize that they had it. Mm-hmm. Haven't heard anybody really talk a lot about having one or utilizing one. But it's good to have options, and I certainly hope that it's successful. Harman Kardon has a great reputation in audio-video, although I've never really thought of their... I don't think of speakers when I think of Harman Kardon. I think of, you know, receivers.
Fair enough.
CD players and such, so from a long time ago when that was a thing. But I also have read good things about Cortana in general, although I have not really used it.
Now, that surprises me with you being so all in into the Microsoft ecosystem. I've not used Cortana at all. I've seen people use it. The last few holdouts of people I know who were Windows Phone people demoed it and what it was capable of, and it seemed like a personal digital assistant. I don't know that anybody can really argue that Google is sort of the king of the mountain when it comes to the personal assistants right now. Alexa, okay.
Samsung has Bixby on the way. Any day now, it's going to be coming to a phone near you.
Just next week. Just next quarter. Just next year.
Next quarter, South Korea. I don't know.
I think that proves that it's hard to build these AI assistants.
I agree, but the mistake that Samsung made, in my opinion, is they put it on a hardware button that you cannot disable, and that's causing a lot of... I shouldn't say a lot, but it's causing issues with users that have the SA.
That to me smacks of a senior executive decision that wasn't fully thought out, and maybe engineers not willing to push hard enough that, hey guys, you maybe shouldn't make this an unconfigurable hardware button. We're not ready.
Right. And I've read some people at Android Central getting a little ticked off at it because they like go to launch the camera, and if you hit brush that button, it tries to launch too, and then you're going to cause a delay, and you'll probably miss your shot. I mean, a few second delay is all it takes for, especially kids, to get out of the frame.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, that would really frustrate me if that happened at all. I mean, yeah, you can't get in the way of using the phone. That should be like rule number one.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I haven't really used Cortana. I've seen, read some good things about it, but I also kind of get a feeling that if you're still using a Windows phone, man, you're swearing by it and you're going to talk about how great everything on it is.
Well, that's true. I know that they have got it integrated into Windows 10. I've never turned it on or used it on any machine that I have that has Windows 10. But to that end, I don't use Siri on my laptop and my desktop that have Siri capabilities. And other than really like setting alarms or reminders, I don't use it on my iPhone. If I really need to use a personal voice digital assistant, I go with Google. Google is sort of the king of the hill. Like I said, the Alexa is not bad, but I tend to find myself using my Amazon Echo primarily as a music listening device when we're in the kitchen. And in that setting, like sound quality, it's not the top of my list. Being loud enough to hear while, you know, we're doing dishes or water's running or you're cooking and having access to, you know, play pop music, play classic rock, play whatever. That's at the top of my list. It delivers for that. I haven't used the other functionalities and features, and I don't know what percentage of customers do. I mean, I think they were doing a promo a few months ago where if you ordered a gift card, a $25 gift card, you got an additional $5 gift card, but you had to do it through the Echo, ordering it by voice. And I did that, but that's literally the only time I've ever purchased anything through the Echo.
You know, I guess I have been in Jeff's house, and he did utilize that thing to tell dad jokes.
Right, and I mean, that's neat, but how many dad jokes do you need on tap like that?
True enough. By the way, we do have an iPhone 7 in our house now.
Oh.
My wife upgraded from a 6, so after about, she made it about 2.5 years, and we got the iPhone 7, 128 gig.
Nice.
This time, the upgrade process went a lot easier for me. It was kind of a breeze, so I guess I was just got caught on the one off last time around with the contradictory operating systems.
I gotcha. Well, and you probably aren't noticing huge differences from a 6 to a 7. I mean, it's going to be faster and the camera's going to be a little bit better, but you know, other than the fact that it's the water resistance and no headphone jack, I don't know for the average user you're going to notice a huge difference.
Yeah, and she was a little annoyed. My wife was a little annoyed about that, but she was happy when the salesperson, you know, showed her, well, these comes with these headphones that you can just plug in.
Right.
Or you can put this dongle in. She seemed to be fine with that.
Yeah, I've adapted, and I do probably 50% of my listening with the dongle on regular headphones and 50% on Bluetooth, and I get by. The only time it ever aggrieves me is at night when I want to listen to something and charge my phone, and I broke down and I bought one of those Griffin dual lightning dongles that lets you both charge and play at the same time. So Griffin got their pound of flesh out of me, but you know, it is what it is. I'm committed to the Apple way of life, so That's yeah. The sacrifice you've got to make.
And that's a decent solution. So a couple of quick items that we've had in the notes a few weeks ago, which is probably a few months ago by now. But we mentioned on the show that AT&T was going to buy Straight Path Communications to increase its 5G spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be for about $1.6 billion. Turns out Straight Path got a better offer. And now Verizon is going to pay $3.1 billion, almost double, for the privilege of getting a larger spectrum in 5G. And Straight Path gets to pay $38 million to AT&T for backing out.
Okay.
So I found that interesting that apparently the 5G spectrum is very sought after.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like real estate, right? With spectrum, with electromagnetic frequency, they're not making more of it. So it's all about location, location, location. You know, if somebody's got a certain chunk of bandwidth in a market, they're the only people that have that chunk. I don't know enough about 5G to know how much it can be sliced and diced as far as how narrow the frequency bands can be without causing interference. And in looking at the article that you had linked to, it mentions that that spectrum, millimeter wave spectrum, which I think, if I remember correctly, is part of the frequencies used in those TSA nudie scanners. It says it's 28 to 39 gigahertz. So that's way, way up there. So I don't know in that range of frequencies if attenuation on water and trees and things like that is a problem, like in the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, you know, a heavy rainstorm will knock out communications. And so you've got, you know, like the 5 gigahertz, which is less affected by it. But I'm assuming at some point you get back into a multiple of 2.4, and at 28 gigahertz, that's what, 10 times, so maybe there's a multiple effect harmonic around there. So I'm just curious if this is going to suffer from any of those issues, or if you get, you know, better penetration through buildings. I would think obviously a tiny little wave like that could go through, you know, brick and steel and all that fun kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool.
I was thinking when we talked about this with AT&T buying it, that it was going to be over actual hardwire, such and such. Maybe I am imagining that.
Well, I mean, the whole point of the 5G protocol is, you know, faster wireless with higher bandwidth and all of that fun stuff. But I don't know enough about it to speak super intelligently. This article does reference that that the millimeter wave will compromise much of 5G backhaul, where wired options such as cable or fiber can't reach. So it may be more point-to-point connections, where you've got a building here, and way out there in the middle of nowhere, you've got another building, and you just do a very focused directional antenna that points from one building to the other, and then all of a sudden, you know, whammo, you've got a gigabit connection or something between the two of them. So you could do that to feed towers way out in the boonies without having to actually get, you know, a cable or a fiber out to them, and then use that as a repeater to send LTE or something like that out to the unwashed masses on their smart devices.
Yeah, it could be. So that, well, in any event, Verizon, I guess, don't look for any bargains on their network charges, since they just dropped $3.1 billion to purchase that. But yeah, you probably get coverage.
I mean, that's the trade-off, right? Like when we were driving up to the lake, we drove through some pretty rural parts of Indiana, and I have to say that while there were plenty of places where I had no high-speed internet, I didn't lose service at any point all the way through. And we took some back roads specifically to see this the fact that there's more than corn in Indiana. And pro tip, there is not much more than corn in Indiana once you get 10 or 15 miles outside of a city.
There's soybeans too.
There's corn and there's soybeans, and that's about it. But there is Verizon coverage. So kudos to Verizon. That trip would have been much different with T-Mobile or AT&T. I can say that, having made that trip before with both AT&T and T-Mobile.
So we got more news on the iPad Pro 10.5-inch.
Yep.
And I'm going to ask you about it in a second, but a little anecdote. We were at the carrier store buying the new iPhone, and the salesperson said, hey, with every new iPhone you can get an iPad. I can't remember which one.
Probably the for iPad 4.
$99 and then $10 a month. And my wife looked at me and said, well, you know, I could use a bigger screen sometimes. And I said, wait for the new 10.5, because it looks sexy.
It does. And, you know, again, we're probably a few weeks late. There are lots of reviews that have trickled out now, and people have actually gotten them in their hot little hands. I have been looking for a display that has updated and refreshed, and sadly have not stumbled across one yet. And I see that you have linked here MKBHD's review, which I will put a link to in the show notes. I've not had a chance to watch that yet.
He liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I have not found anybody who has had anything less than glowing praise for this thing. You know, benchmark tests that have come out are putting it outperforming the MacBook Pro in some CPU and GPU tests. The one article I saw says that in the Geekbench Metal GPU test, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro beat out all other devices, including the MacBook Pro, in just raw performance. And the new 12.9-inch iPad model came in second, followed by the 2016 MacBook Pro. The 2017 MacBook Pro placed fourth behind its predecessor. They said that devices were run through a pair of GFX Xbench graphics tests, and yet again the tests show the iPad Pro reigning supreme, with the 12.9 and 10.5-inch models edging out both of the MacBook Pro models. So, I mean, they are number-crunching, graphic-manipulating beasts. With the reduced latency on the Pencil, I have heard people saying that it's just it's almost, not quite, but almost like pen on paper, and that's mostly artists that would notice the kind of latency that you might get. I've read from, you know, more lay people, they're like, it's just instantaneous. I mean, it feels like writing on a piece of paper. There is no perceivable delay for note taking and things of that nature. And I don't remember Apple's fancy marketing buzzwordy fluid motion or true motion. The fact that the display refreshes at 120 hertz, everything I have read says that, yeah, it sounds gimmicky and people are like, you know, who cares? And you can't see it until you actually see it in person. And just universally, everybody has said you won't believe your eyes. Like, it really makes a huge difference. It makes it feel instantaneous, just fluid, smooth, no delay. And everybody said the same thing, which is that they said the same thing when Apple came out with their Retina product way back when, and it was just a game changer, but you had to see it in person to understand and appreciate, you know, a high-density display. And when you held up a Retina, well, I think that was the iPhone 4, next to a 3GS, I mean, the 3GS looked like you were looking at it through a screen door. And it was just, you know, it was a game changer. And now everything is, you know, quote-unquote Retina, or in the world of Android, a lot of devices are higher DPI than Retina devices from Apple. And, you know, we just now expect, you know, 324 DPI, 440 some DPI. I mean, I think some of the highest density phones are pushing 500 pixels per inch. It's just insane. And they're saying that this is that for fluidity within the user interface. I am eagerly looking forward to actually getting my hands on one and playing with it. Really, really would like to pick up one of these. Need to talk that one over with the wife a little bit first, because it's kind of spendy. But from everything I've been reading, it's, you know, for the average person, that and a smart keyboard and the pen, and you can just throw all the rest of your computing devices away running iOS 11. I mean, they're saying that's the caveat. Like, it's great now, but when iOS 11 comes out, it's going to be a game changer for how people interact with, you know, personal devices. You won't need a laptop for 80-90% of what you do. You won't need a desktop. This will be the go-to device. It's sort of converging. So I'm very excited about it.
Do we have a release date on that?
Yeah. It's available now. I mean, you can buy them. They are shipping. Wow. You just can't find them in displays yet. Like, gotcha. I've been to a handful. I've not actually braved the trip to the local Apple store, because it is a madhouse there. I've been to, you know, big box retailers. I've been to Best Buys. I've been to places that, you know, have lots of Apple display stuff out. Nobody has a 10.5 inch out yet. But hey, if you've got a credit card, you know, burning up your pocket, you can order one. And I don't know what the lead time is on them right now. There may not even be any. Although, if some of their other products are any indicator, it could be weeks and weeks, because the AirPods, I think, are still backlog like 6 weeks. You can have it today. That and the updated refresh 12.9 inch iPad Pro.
I have a credit card.
Well, I do too. The issue is I also have a wife, and, you know, she is a lot more rational about frivolous expenses than I am.
The difference is my wife's the one that's actually asking for it. So
I think that she would not be at all disappointed. I mean, everything I have read says that it is just unbelievable.
Now it looks good. I'll have to mention it to her, because for some reason I was thinking that this was a later release. So
no, I'm looking here.
Apple.com. It looks like it's all available.
Order today, delivers by Tuesday if you choose to pay for shipping, and I can have it for Wednesday for free. But it's spendy. The 10.5-inch with 256 gigabytes of storage, you're looking at $749. Another $99 bucks for the pen. I think $149, $169, something like that for the keyboard. I mean, you're pushing $1,000. It is a computer at that price. I mean, there is no getting around that. Yeah, I mean, you're in $1,000. But it's wow. It's pretty amazing. So yeah, looking forward to getting some hands on with that. You know, another quick one, I guess 2 weeks ago now, I thought was interesting, just sort of passing through, but Chuck Thacker, who is the lead designer of the Xerox Alto, passed away. He died on June 14th at the age of 74, and the Alto, which they launched in 1973, was credited as the first ever computer based on a graphical user interface controlled by a mouse, and it's one of the inspirations behind Apple's Lisa and Macintosh computers. And, you know, obviously lots of long-running, you know, Apple stole from Xerox, and actually Apple and Microsoft both licensed from Xerox. They made a lot of money on the deal, but the lead designer just passed away. So there you go. A little bit of computer history is now in the books, I guess.
According to that PBS documentary that was out years ago now, yeah, Xerox had it all in their Palo Alto Research Center or something like that.
PARC, Palo Alto Research Center.
Yeah. And they just decided, you know what, we're a paper company, and didn't really want to develop that technology they had in-house.
Yeah, they literally didn't know what they had. And it's amazing how often that's happened. Wozniak and Jobs went to HP, I think it was, that Wozniak worked at with the first Apple. And Wozniak felt that he had to give them the first right of refusal. And they looked at it and went, this is ridiculous. No, who's going to want this? Of course, you can have it and do what you want with it. And now I think Apple is the most valuable company, at least on paper, in the world. Something like that. They've got $250 billion in cash. They're doing something right.
That's right. So the next one that I had on the list was that Google is implementing a hub system to help carriers adopt their new RCS messaging model. And I had read about this RCS format a while ago. They had a couple carriers that had signed on, and they were trying to get some other carriers in the U.S. to adopt this protocol that will compete with iMessage. Basically, you know, you'll have the read receipts and such. Mm-hmm. And apparently that was going slow enough that Google's trying to help them along and say, just, we're going to do the hub. So all you have to do is connect to our hub, and then everything will work fine. And that would be nice. But I will say that I would like to see them, to see Google, if they do this, stick with it, because it would be good to have a competitor to iMessage, and there's nothing like that in the Android system right now.
No, and, you know, gosh, iMessage is so frictionless, and it's so nice that,
yes,
I mean, it is a huge incentive if you have, you know, some percentage of your network on iOS devices. That really lends itself to wanting to stay in that. Just, and it's such a stupid little thing that Apple has leveraged to such, I mean, power. And everybody talks about, oh, imagine iMessage on Android. And I think iMessage itself as a protocol could be put on. Apple themselves talked about in many keynotes ago about they could leverage this technology across all platforms. But at this point, I think they'd be foolish to, because it is a draw. It keeps people on iOS. And my only concern of Google implementing this hub model is that allows the manufacturers and the carriers to kind of tap into the hub their own stupid way. And are you going to get Verizon's app that ties into Google's RCS hub that is just a piece of garbage, and Sprint's app that is a piece of garbage, and potentially Samsung's app that is garbage? I mean, is it? I think Google needs to own it soup to nuts like Apple does.
That's possible. And it can depend. If you go to the carrier and you get a phone, like you say, you can get Samsung's RCS app, Verizon's RCS app, and then I'm sure there'll be third-party RCS apps available in the Google Play Store. It's definitely a concern. And there's no real way around that, though. If you're going to be on an open platform like Android is, you're going to have to put up with some of that stuff. So it's going to be a matter of the execution. Does it work? Can you reply back and forth pretty quickly or not? You just have to wait and see.
Well, and I mean, Google kind of has that a little bit today. I mean, they launched Allo and Duo back earlier this year, late last year. And I mean, I don't see people using those or talking about them. I don't even know if Google's really still promoting them. So, I mean, those sort of fizzled as a cross-platform messaging service. I know that among the younger folks that I know, Snapchat is heavily used. They don't necessarily care to switch to another messaging tool. Facebook Messenger is huge among people probably a little bit older than the tween teens. People in their 20s and 30s, I know, use a lot of Facebook. I mean, there are so many different messaging systems. Yeah. I think that Google is fighting
an uphill battle. WhatsApp is another big one.
Yeah, I think less in America than the rest of the world, but WhatsApp is huge in India and in the East. I'm just curious if this is too little too late, or if Google can... Again, Google puts some great stuff out there. They've got some great ideas, but they won't dominate it and say, no, this is how you do it and own it. And I think that's a ding against Google.
I was using Google Messenger for a while. They've now switched it to Android Messenger. So that may be what they are going to try to, they'll have it installed on every phone. Here's right. Android Messenger. Here's the RCS format. But I actually took it off of my LG phone because it wasn't working that well. I was missing messages completely. And then I went with LG's messaging app, and everything has been, I won't say perfect, but it's been a lot better. I get every message. Sometimes it's just hours later.
And I mean, that's a big deal for messaging.
Yes.
I mean, we've become so insistent that you get it delivered instantaneously, hours later, like an email is unacceptable these days. It needs to be, real time, in order, don't miss it, never screw up. I mean, it's a tall order. There is no doubt about that.
It is. And actually, I don't have any problems with the Android phones, but every once in a while, a message that I send to an Apple phone or I get from an Apple phone will be delayed.
Sure. And I've seen that too, especially switching back and forth between Android and iOS, where iOS will still hold on to your profile and it'll think that you're on iMessage, and then it'll really delay. It's tough to switch back and forth and use iMessage. You almost have to turn off all of the Apple goodness and live in the SMS world. And yeah, it's a challenge. There's still no good, perfect solution yet. I saw an interesting one while I was on vacation, still diligently reading the tech headlines, and this surprised me a little bit. There was just a recent announcement by, I'm going to say a major, but putting asterisks around that, U.S. carrier has announced that they will not sell anything but Apple's iPhone from now on. So it's not a carrier maybe in the traditional sense. They're one of those, what do they call them, mobile network value add an MNVA or MVNO. MVNO. So it is Virgin Mobile has announced that they are going to only sell, as of June 27th, Apple's iPhones. They will not carry Android phones. They will not carry Windows phones. They will not have flip phones. They will not have feature phones. No dumb phones. Nothing but iPhone. All iPhone, all the time. And they are going to be launching a new wireless plan along with their new rollout. There was a press release saying there's iPhone and then there's everything else. At Virgin Mobile, we're teaming up with Apple to offer you nothing but the world's most popular phone, because life in the inner circle is about living big, expanding your horizons, and pursuing your passions. And it starts with an iPhone you'll adore. that is a lot of marketing fluffery. But that is what they put in their official announcement. So along with iPhone-only sales strategy, they are launching a new promotion, a $50 a month Inner Circle plan. If you buy a new iPhone through Virgin, you'll get the first full year of unlimited service for just $1. And after the first year ends, the monthly fee is just $50. And it does go on to say that, as with all of the air quote unlimited plans these days, the service Virgin Mobile is offering isn't truly unlimited at all. The company notes that it will deprioritize your service if you manage to burn through more than 23 gigabytes of data during any billing cycle. That's a lot of data. I think way more than the vast majority of people use.
I never hit two.
Yeah, I mean,
I never hit 2 gigs a month.
We're on like an 8 gig plan, and I don't know that we've I've looked, and you know, your historical usage, we're like 3.2, 3.5. Yeah. I mean, it is nothing.
That's three people, right? So,
well, just two, really. It's just wife and I. Okay. We've let our daughter use one of our old phones, but it's not turned on. I mean, she's 7. She doesn't need a cell phone. It's ridiculous that we let her use it to listen to music and play YouTube videos, but whatever, first world problems. So I don't know how Virgin's network is. I mean, I know they resell. I don't know who they resell. Are they Sprint?
I don't know.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, there's always those issues of they're only as good as the network that they're riding on, but it's a bold move. You know, only going to sell the iPhone, and we'll see, I guess, how it pans out. I guess they've done the research and know what it is that their customers want, or at least think they do.
There's a part of me that always likes, or tends to like, I should say, SKU rationalization. So, you know, you're streamlining your supply chain, you're limiting the amount of items that are in your system that you have to deliver to various stores. So fair. That seems like a good thing. And since I had never considered Virgin Mobile anyway, I'm not really losing anything by staying in the Android world. So we'll see how it pans out. If they can make enough money at it with that niche, then good for them.
Well, I mean, Branson's crazy, but he's done well for himself over the last, 30 years. So
yeah.
Maybe it'll pay off again for him.
He's an iPhones in space.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, if he can find people to pay, $200,000 to fly to the edge of space, he can convince everybody that they want only an iPhone, maybe? I don't know.
Could be.
So Microsoft announced a new Xbox. I hate to talk much about it since Jeff's not here as our official Xbox guy, so I guess we'll put a pin in that. But there is a new Xbox announced, the Xbox One X. So we are aware of it. We will talk about it more when Jeff gets back, hopefully the next episode.
Got my eye on it. We'll see if Santa brings one to the house for Christmas.
I mean, the specs that they announced look pretty pretty compelling. So I'll be curious to see what some of his thoughts are on that. I guess some big news that kind of broke the last couple weeks, and I wanted to touch on. I saw an article before the big news broke that was talking about Amazon's worth, and there was an article that came out on the 20th anniversary of Amazon's IPO. Their market cap was $459 billion compared to Walmart's $228 billion. So Amazon was worth two Walmarts, at least as the stock market values them. It says that it took them 18 years as a public company to catch Walmart in market value, and less than 2 years for them to be worth twice as much. That is staggering. I mean, Walmart was the behemoth. Nobody was ever going to out Walmart. And then to overtake them in less than 2 years to be double their size, that's just hard to even fathom.
Have you heard of the acronym FANG?
F-A-N-G?
F-A-N-G.
No?
Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, Amazon. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. So these are tech stocks, and some people throw Microsoft in there too. And they have been leading the market in this run-up to over, 2,500 in the S&P 500, or maybe 24 and change right now. So some of the financial newsletters that I read are speculating that they're really overvalued. And particularly when you look at the amount of money the Amazon puts in the bank, which is minuscule compared to what Walmart has made. It looks like, I don't think it's a good time to be buying Amazon stock. But the flip side of that is if you have not been buying it, you've been lagging the market because that's what's going up.
Right.
So but everybody's buying. I would have to think that Walmart, just based on its real estate, is a much safer buy.
Oh, you know, probably from a, and the article did not go into tangible assets. I'm assuming in terms of hard assets that Walmart is way more valuable. I mean, they have what, 3,500, 3,800 physical stores just in North America. I mean, they've got a supply chain and distribution system that, I mean, they invented the just-in-time, basically, concept. I mean, I think Amazon is outdoing them, but that's because Amazon doesn't have to do anything but logistics, whereas that's just, you know, one part of what makes a Walmart successful. Having seen the inside of logistics centers that Walmart runs, admittedly, my exposure to them is probably about 7 or 8 years behind the time now. They were just unbelievable. I mean, they were completely automated and just an amazing amount of intelligence built into their distribution facilities. And I'm sure that so much has changed in 7 or 8 years that it would be unrecognizable today. And it does talk about the fact that that Walmart has 3 times Amazon's annual revenue and 5 times their net income. So I'm curious, are we looking at, you know, bubble 2.0 or 2.5? You know, Amazon consistently puts their profits back into the Amazon behemoth. So, I mean, I think just until within the last few years, they didn't actually have profits, right? They were operating at break even or small losses. And this does talk about that Amazon has consistently grown their revenue north of 20%, and they've continued to pump cash into the new business areas like Amazon Web Services, which some have estimated is already worth $160 billion. And then that's kind of the follow-on is the what just happened story that broke the week before last, which is Amazon bought Whole Foods for almost $14 billion in cash. Just Jeff Bezos opened a door to a room he forgot about, saw $14 billion laying there and thought, yeah, I think I'm going to buy a grocery store.
I saw some memes on that, Jeff Bezos talking to Alexa, buy groceries,
okay,
buy Whole Foods. Whole Foods.
Right.
So
the Bloomberg News reported that the breakdown is that Bezos and company are going to be paying $42 per share for the chain. I don't know at the time of the announcement what their stock was trading at, so I don't know if that was a premium or how much of a premium it was. They did confirm, saying, quote, millions of people love Whole Foods Market because they offer the best natural and organic foods and they make it fun to eat healthy, said Bezos in a press release. You know what makes it fun to eat healthy? Make healthy foods taste like peanut M&Ms. That would make it fun to eat healthy. Quinoa does not fun. I'm just putting it out there. But what's interesting is Amazon is moving out of the virtual world and back into the brick and mortar world. And I'm curious what that means for the future, because Amazon has just opened its 10th, I believe, brick and mortar bookstore. They have bought Whole Foods and are going to continue operating those. They are piloting basically convenience stores in Seattle. I think they're employee only at the moment, where employees can go in and in theory just pick up items, put them in a basket and walk out, and Amazon will intelligently know what you've taken and charge you. So what does it mean that Amazon is moving out of the virtual world and back into the real world? I don't know.
A couple things. First of all, I'd like to point out, looking at the financials here, in the last 5 quarters, Walmart's made about 5 times as much income than Amazon. Mm-hmm. So as far as putting money in the bank, Walmart is about 5 times as, 5 times better in the cash flow business. Now, I know that Amazon has been trying to break into the grocery segment. They visited my former employer, the commercial bakery that I used to work at, mm-hmm. and they were looking to maybe partner or get some products made for them. And one of the reasons I think they bought Whole Foods, I've seen the speculation anyway, is for the supply chain that Whole Foods has to get fresh, you know, produce, healthy produce to the market. In Indianapolis, at least on the side of town I'm in, Amazon contracts with a chain called Fresh Time.
Right.
Just sort of an upper scale, high-end grocery. So you can get your groceries delivered through those. And then as far as the other brick and mortars, was Jeff talking about Walmart groceries, or maybe it was somewhere else that I heard of it? Basically, you can now go to Walmart and they will come and come out to your car and put it in your car. Maybe that was Kroger. Anyway, the grocery store chains are starting to try to figure out how to make it so that you don't have to go into the store if you don't want to. And that is probably in response to outfits like Amazon that are trying to break into the grocery store market. And this is another big entryway for Amazon into it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, gosh, I think about my buying habits, and I suppose for staple products that I know what it is, I would feel comfortable saying I need a box of Chex Mix. I need a bag of Lay's potato chips. I need toilet paper. I need, you know, peanut butter. I mean, that's not really a thing that you have to use any sort of judgment. You kind of know what you're getting. But, you know, a big part of grocery shopping is subjective. I want to look at the meat and pick out the meat. I want to look at the produce and pick out the produce. And I don't know that me personally, I feel comfortable relinquishing that control. And maybe that is strictly a demographic thing. I don't know. I'm willing to admit I grew up with that mental model of you go to the grocery store, you trudge down all the aisles, you pick it, you got to thump the coconuts, you got to thump the watermelons, they got to sound just so, and that's how you do it. Maybe younger people or more urban people don't care.
I remember this now. I was talking to a friend that had done, I think Kroger, but basically what he utilizes it as the staples.
Sure.
So for this service, he'll go online, he'll order the peanut butter, the cereal, everything that he usually orders. You go to the store, they put it in your car, you drive away. That's great. Then if you want to go back on a separate trip or another, you know, midweek and get your produce and such, that's the time to do it. And you don't have to worry about anything else. You can just kind of go in the front of the store where the fresh produce is, pick through it, and then walk out. Anything that you're not comfortable getting delivered by somebody else.
Yeah, but is that better? I feel like I'm still making two trips to the store every week.
I've read something, and I can't remember where the source was. I'll have to try to dig it up, but something like 70% of purchases at grocery stores are unplanned.
I could believe that. There's definitely a non-insignificant portion of impulse purchases every time I go to the grocery.
So if you ask me if it's better, it probably is, at least for your pocketbook, as long as you can avoid those impulse buys when you're ordering online.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know, like my wife and I will go and we'll have a rough idea of a menu plan and we need to get, you know, certain things. But, you know, some percentage, 20% maybe, will be at the store. Oh, we're going to make tacos. Yeah. We forgot to write down cheese. We need to go get shredded cheese. And if I don't see it because I'm walking through the dairy case, I'm not thinking, oh, I don't have any shredded cheese at home. I need to get, you know, taco cheese or whatnot. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's an impulse because I didn't have it on a list, but it's not really an impulse because you can't have tacos without cheese. What am I, a monster?
Call us up, folks. Have you used the online grocery ordering? If you have, let us know how it's working out for you.
Now, I will say I do have one anecdote. My my sister works at a place that is a serviced by Amazon Fresh or Amazon Now, that basically that 2 hour or less delivery window. And there was a lady she worked with last year who was pregnant and was having strong cravings in the middle of the day, had to have some particular ice cream, Ben and Jerry's, I don't know what it was, and basically yelled at everybody not to judge her as she had ice cream, a pint of ice cream delivered in 45 minutes to the office so that she could, you know, satiate those cravings. And my sister was flabbergasted that yes, she showed up in the lobby and there was a guy there with an insulated bag and handed her a pint of ice cream, and it happened in less than an hour. So, I mean,
nice.
If someone would bring me pints of ice cream, that would just be like the bee's knees.
Especially if they were healthy, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, those healthy ice creams. I saw a story. I want to jump over one real quick because this kind of pigtails on a little bit what we're talking about. There was a story I saw, I believe last week, that Walmart is reportedly telling some of their tech vendors to leave Amazon's cloud. Reportedly, again, there's not been any specific confirmation. Walmart has been warning some tech companies that if they want Walmart's business, they can't run applications on Amazon's cloud platform, which is ginormous, as we have talked about in the past. Amazon Web Services, Amazon's cloud platform, Amazon Web Services. So some of these companies were reporting to the Wall Street Journal they said that Walmart uses some tech vendors' cloud apps that run on AWS, and Walmart spokesman Dan Toporek told the Wall Street Journal, though he declined to say which apps or how many, but he did acknowledge instances where Walmart is pushing for AWS alternatives. A representative from Amazon did not respond to requests for comment. Toporek told CNBC in an email, quote, "Our vendors have the choice of using any cloud provider that meets their needs and their customers' needs. It shouldn't be a big surprise. There are cases in which we'd prefer our most sensitive data isn't sitting on a competitor's platform." Walmart does not appear to be alone in this push to leave AWS. Other large retailers are reportedly requesting that service providers move away from AWS. The Wall Street Journal said, citing technology vendors that work with retailers. So obviously there is a huge battle between Amazon and Walmart. It looks like it's going to be heating up. Amazon just bought Whole Foods, and they are, like I said, expanding back into physical stores with bookstores and whatnot. Walmart has bought, Jet.com, and it seems like they've made another acquisition within the last 6 or 10 months that is squarely in Amazon's turf. I think they own Vudu as well. I think it's Vudu for streaming, and that obviously goes against Netflix and Amazon. Is this a bully move? Is this just smart business? An Amazon spokesperson did tell the Wall Street Journal that Walmart's latest moves are saying tactics like this are bad for business and customers. Yes, and coming from a small employer previously in my past that sold into Walmart, Walmart has a lot of influence. When they suggest things to their vendors, those suggestions carry a lot of weight, because while they were certainly not the company's most profitable customer, they were incredibly consistent, and they brought in huge, huge volume that allowed that customer to be more profitable on other lines of business that they just couldn't have been as profitable on if they didn't have Walmart spending just gobs and gobs of money annually, very, very consistently, month to month, very predictable. So when Walmart said, "Hey, how about you do or don't do that?" the company took that very seriously.
How high?
Yeah, exactly. And and I remember having detailed conversations with leadership and salespeople at the company who were saying things like, they had a particularly good relationship with Walmart because their contracts didn't allow Walmart to come in and look at the books. Apparently, with some organizations, Walmart gets stipulations that they can just show up and say, "Show us your books. We want to know exactly what you're making. We want to know cost of goods. We want to know gross margin. We want to know it all. And you sign that paper if you want to be in business with Walmart."
So, their shelf space is very valuable. They were a big customer at the bakery. When you added Walmart and Sam's together, they were the biggest customer at the bakery hat. Same type of things. You ran so much of their product on the line that the bakery could sell other stuff to other customers cheaper because Walmart was so efficient and we could run those lines so efficiently.
Right.
So yeah, they have it goes back to, like you said, Walmart streamlined the inventory supply chain system. And because they did that and put themselves in a market leader position, then they do have influence over what their suppliers can do and can't do. There are some benefits to that too. I mean, Walmart was a big pushed the bakery to be more green, mm-hmm. to send less stuff to the landfill. That was a big initiative of theirs, and the bakery did improve in that over the years that I was there. Not that I had anything to do with that, by the way. I was just in the front office, you know, running spreadsheets. But
Burning those tires, were you?
Yeah. But I did, hear about those types of initiatives. So Amazon's welcome to call it bullying, but the fact is that Walmart has earned that market share. And if they want to say, hey, you can't subsidize our competitor, I think that is understandable.
Yeah, you know, and the other side of that coin is that Amazon Web Services, don't get me wrong, it is absolutely amazing what they have done and the scope and the scale and what they are capable of doing. And if I was a small business starting up, I mean, why on earth would I build out my own infrastructure? I would, you know, my first instinct would be to look at a cloud provider for, you know, darn near everything, because you don't need to build that infrastructure. There's no reason to. You've got Google, you've got Amazon, you've got Microsoft, you've got Oracle. I mean, you've got some huge name. You've got IBM. Let them do it. But the big but to that is, as we saw, what, 2-3 months ago, when the engineer at Amazon did that little oopsie in the command line and took off, 30% of the internet, something like that, huge mm-hmm. swath of the internet for hours and hours. When you consolidate what is supposed to be a fairly bulletproof distributed system that was designed to be distributed for a reason, for redundancy and survivability, and you take that and put it into five houses, there is a huge risk there. And I mean, from Walmart's perspective, like, you know, Walmart, and like you said, they pushed the company I was at to become dramatically better at data analytics and analyzing their own internal numbers and their own internal systems. And I mean, that's a huge strategic risk if you can't get to your business intelligence system, because Walmart wants those reports every single week, no exception. And the thing I always thought was interesting is Walmart had their own reports. Our reports were, they just matched them up just to make sure, I think, that we were ticking and tying, because they would call us on in a moment if we were slipping on, you know, shipping on time or, you know, not fully shipping orders and things. I mean, they knew that almost before we did. And, you know, to have moved our infrastructure to a cloud provider and run the risk of being hacked, being compromised, being down, that's a risk to Walmart. If they can't, you know, make sure that their shelves are stocked, that's money in their pocket. So I can see both sides of it. It definitely sounds a little bullying and a little predatory, but they're trying to watch out for, you know, their best interest. It is an interesting world in which all of these systems have woven together. Putting your free market libertarian cap on for a moment, Todd, does Amazon hit a point where AWS has to be spun off? Is it too big? Does it become monopolistic?
No, I can't see. I don't see how that could take place in the environment we're in with that business, because there's so little barrier to entry. If you want to run a cloud service, you need what? Access to the internet and storage farms, right?
Well, I don't mean necessarily running a cloud service, but would there be a requirement that they have to divest of their cloud company from their e-commerce company because of conflicts of interest?
I'm having trouble picturing how this could come about. Like, it just seems like there would be so many ways that you could route around that in that environment. How would they force you as a consumer into using their solution?
I don't know. I'm just speculating, because Amazon is very quickly wormed its way into so many markets. You know, obviously they built their cloud platform for themselves and then realized, hey, we can also sell this to other businesses and you know, can, you know, we'll make money on this side too. I'm just curious, if does Amazon get to the point where they become a monopolistic company and get looked at for, probably not, but It's interesting to speculate where they could go. I mean, look what they've done
in
2 years.
Some monopolistic pricing, because they're not making that money, that much money. They're making money, don't get me wrong. I mean, $724 million a quarter is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
But that's on $35.7 billion in sales. So it's not that high of a percentage.
That's true. That is true. And for a monopoly to be illegal, you have to be utilizing it to screw up the markets, right? It's not illegal to have a monopoly. It's illegal to leverage a monopoly.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. I don't know.
It's kind of, you know, somebody at the FTC puts its finger in the air, or somebody makes a good campaign donation and they decide, oh, we need to investigate somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my free market libertarian hat right there.
It'll all work itself out. I've got one more. I think I know we're probably at an hour close to it, but I got one more I wanted to touch on because it just came out, and it makes me happy that there is action being taken, but I'm also a bit suspect at what the ultimate resolution will be. But it was just announced last week that the FCC has levied their largest ever fine against a robocalling outfit, a guy out of Florida who was responsible for nearly 100 million calls in the last 3 months of 2016. They have slapped him with a $120 million fine. Again, the largest single fine ever. They proposed the $120 million fine against Adrian Abramovich of Miami, Florida, alleging that his operation made 96 million spoofed robocalls during the period in which the FCC investigated. And the calls were using neighborhood spoofing technology. That is from the article. That includes local area codes and the first three numbers of the recipient's own phone number to encourage people to answer the calls. Now, I don't know about you. I have gotten a huge uptick in the last 6 months, 8 months of calls that are in my area code with my prefix.
Agreed.
My wife has actually gotten a phone call from her own phone number. And then the next day had people texting her saying, please stop calling me. So they were using her number. It says, upon answering, recipients would hear a recorded message asking them to press 1 to hear about vacation deals from travel companies such as Marriott, Expedia, Hilton, or TripAdvisor. Calls were then transferred to foreign call centers, including in Mexico, where live operators would try to sell them vacation packages not affiliated with the companies in the recorded message. They also said that this robocall network disrupted emergency medical paging systems by overloading the paging network. It says robocalls rank as the top consumer complaint received by the FCC. Officials at the FCC said, quote, I wish I could promise the American people that today's action will put an end to all unwanted, and as this case makes apparent, dangerous robocalls. That was from Commissioner Mijan Slyburn. Not sure how you say their name, saying, quote, sadly, this notice addresses only a fraction of the 2.6 billion robocalls made in the month of May.
Wow.
It is a huge issue, and I have no idea what the solution is. I know that all the carriers, I mean, everybody is working on this, is talking about it. It's a problem. And here's the thing. You can slap me with a $120 million fine. You're never going to get $120 million out of me. I mean, it's a Pyrrhic victory. It's
yeah, you can at least maybe put that particular operation out of business, and if they don't pay the fine, can they maybe repossess the equipment? I don't know what all the FCC has available at its disposal.
You know,
if you're disrupting emergency calls,
I mean, that's criminal, right?
I don't know. It probably is not. Otherwise, they would have actually tried to physically repossess some equipment or such. I mean, to me, that for this type of operation, $120 million is a good start. Because what I laugh about is, you know, every once in a while I'll take the call and it's a recording and it says something like, please consider this your last notice.
Right.
And yes, I would love to consider this my last notice, but the calls keep coming.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many scams out there. I actually got on the phone months ago with a guy, a very nice gentleman named Richard. I'm putting Richard in quotes at my place of employment, and I just was messing with him. He was from Microsoft support and had noticed abnormal things coming from my IP address and needed to initiate security procedures, blah, blah, blah. And I played along with him for a bit and kind of strung him along. And then he finally realized I was jerking his chain. But he didn't. The crazy thing was he didn't hang up. And I just got to chatting with him. And I asked him why he was scamming people. And he's like, well, this is my job. And I'm like, you know, you're just wasting time. And he's like, you know what? You can keep me tied up all day long. I'm in a room with 500 other people doing the same thing. You can stop me from making these calls, but you can't stop all of it. And he was very forthcoming about this. He did not lose a second of sleep about what he was doing. It was a job to him. And he had a script to run through. And just like we go in and you spin Excel spreadsheets and I play with databases, he talked to people and tried to convince them that they needed to install this client on their machine because he was with Microsoft Security. And yeah, that was just his job.
And who was buying the vacation packages?
Well, the
two, how does this guy that you just mentioned get away with saying that he's from Microsoft Security Services?
Because like, he was at a call center in India? And what are they going to do?
Oh, gotcha.
I mean, it's the wild, wild west. If you don't have easy jurisdiction, and okay, right. So Microsoft gets that call center shut down. It is so easy to spin up a new one. And to your point about confiscating equipment, there's no equipment. It's all cloud. It's all virtual. I read another article that was talking about this story, and they said that typically it's overseas networks that originate these calls. They're all voice over IP, and it typically costs less than one penny per phone call to initiate the calls. So you can make a million phone calls, and you haven't really spent any significant money. And even if you only get a tiny, tiny percentage of people who buy in, give you money, fall victim, whatever the scam is, it's a net win. So you don't need a very high hit rate. You can get by with a 1% hit rate or probably even less than that because it's costing you, it's practically free to dial the calls. And, you know, I don't even understand the whole outbound calls where it was a human that called me and it was a guy talking to me. Most of them are just recordings.
Yeah.
And those are practically free. You don't even have to pay a person. You just have a room with, you know, 50, 100 people to answer inbound calls. And if they're answering an inbound call, you got a sucker on the line. Just close them.
So it's a Nigerian email scam.
Pretty much.
Basically, just with over the phone lines.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is just blatant disregard for any sort of laws. I've been getting one on my Google Voice number. It is actually from an Indianapolis number, and I have gotten called repeatedly from it. I'm looking to see if I can find one really quickly. And it is a voice that sounds suspiciously like Morgan Freeman, who says, "Hi, this is Morgan. I'm calling because it's not too late to get great health insurance, to get a great health insurance plan at our price." And he just goes on and on about, you know, and then he's got a 800 number to call back to take advantage of this limited enrollment period. And it's somebody that sounds just like Morgan Freeman, a person impersonating him. They even say it's Morgan, and I don't know how that's legal, but they do it. And I'm getting dozens and dozens of calls a week, and it's going into my Google spam, so I never see them, but they're obviously blasting him out there for some stupid reason. Let's see if I can play this real quick. You gonna play for me, or you gonna make a liar out of me?
"Hi, this is Morgan. I'm calling because it's not too late to get a great health insurance plan at a price you can afford. Get access."
Yeah, so that's and I'm getting bombarded with these calls. Somebody is calling that 800 number and getting hooked by one of these scammy insurance places.
Yeah, and so if they, like you said, the guy that they find was in Miami.
Yes.
But if it's from Mexico instead, and they can spoof your neighborhood number, oof.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and this one's not coming from my three-digit prefix. But it is coming from a 317 phone number. And when you type this number into Google, and there are thousands of complaints on websites about this Morgan is calling me, trying to sell me. And just over the last week, I've got, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In the last 7 days, I've gotten 8 calls from this number. So one a day. I'm not buying. They keep calling.
It's messed up.
Yeah. So I don't know. Are there any other stories that you want to hit on? I know we're going probably about an hour now.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up for the week, I think, and talk about what we love.
All right. Well, what is it that you love, Todd?
Before I get to that, though, I just wanted to let you know that I have now watched all of the F is for Family episodes
based
on your recommendation. And I enjoyed it. There was one line in particular that knocked me on the floor laughing. I am not going to repeat it here because it is completely inappropriate. But it was worth it just for that line. It was season 2, episode 9, if anybody wants to play at home.
You'll have to tell me off the air which one specifically. There's really no lines in that show that are probably fit to air among, good gentle public.
One of the things that I like about it is, it takes place in 1973 and 1974. And there are things from the show that they talk about that I can remember. Like, the mosquito spraying trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember those?
I sure do.
And you'd be outside playing, and this truck would go through.
And just fog.
And it would smell terrible. And then all of a sudden they just stopped, and you didn't really notice it. But I wonder how effective those were.
I assume they were probably highly effective, because they were probably spraying, some good chemicals back then that we're not allowed to spray anymore, like DEET. You're not even allowed to put DEET on your kids anymore. It's the only thing that works.
Probably true.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a good show.
So I watched that show on Netflix, and another show that a coworker put me on to Netflix is called Shameless. And this is the U.S. version. This is a show that was adapted from a British show. It started out on Showtime, and now you can find 6 of the 7 seasons on Netflix. And I actually have watched the 7th season as well, because I currently am getting Showtime, so I was able to watch that on the Showtime app.
Oh, okay.
But this is a dark, dark comedy. It follows the adventures of a poor, dysfunctional family on the south side of Chicago. And I want to give you a heads up, this is not a show to watch with the kids. There is lots of nudity, language, and scenes with, not really scenes, but the main character is a drug addict and a drunk. It stars the narrator from the PBS kids show, Curious George. William H. Macy as the lead character.
I love him.
He's fabulous. Does a great job. They do some things with cinematography, not just on him, but on the show in general. And there's a great scene in the first season where you can just kind of see him and see his facial features calculating what is being told to him at the moment. And then he does something completely despicable in the next scene. Also, as I put it, that guy from Reba, Steve Howie, is in it as well. And most importantly, it has Joan Cusack in it, and she is fabulous. I love watching her. She does a great job. So I highly recommend the show. If you binge watch it like I did, it will probably help you appreciate how good your life is in comparison. I know I found myself talking to my wife a little bit more, hey, how's everything going? Just want to make sure we're good, because, man, I do not want to go through what this TV family is going through.
That's kind of cool that it's on Netflix now. I hadn't noticed that. I had Showtime years ago when they were first teasing the show coming, and I remember being excited about it because I was a big William H. Macy fan, and I don't remember if I canceled Showtime or if I just never got around to seeing it at the time, but it slipped off my radar, and so I'm aware of the show. I didn't know it was an adaptation of a British show. I'm gonna have to check that out. I like Joan Cusack. I can't really place the guy from Reba, Steve Howie. I looked at his picture and he's not really ringing any bells with me, but I never watched Reba either.
He was the boyfriend on Reba.
Okay.
So
he was in Sons of Anarchy for a few seasons. He kind of looks vaguely familiar, but I can't, I'm not like, oh, that guy. but I love William H. Macy. So that's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, that's what I love this week. Jacob, what do you love?
Okay, so what I love is sort of an upgrade of something that I already had. I got a new Apple Watch. I got the Nike Plus edition a couple of weeks ago. My original first generation, so what they call the Series Zero, was getting really laggy. I was having a lot of issues with apps running, specifically the running app that I've been using that I think I've mentioned on the show before, Runkeeper. It would crash on me constantly. It wasn't running well. I was complaining about it one night. I was going out for a run and the app kept crashing and I only got credit for like half of the run and was just in a bowel mood. And my wife lovingly agreed to let me take advantage. There was a sale on. It may still be on. I haven't looked to see if it's still running. There was a sale at Best Buy for $70 off the Apple Watch Series 2 and Apple Watch Nike Plus Edition. And I went and picked up a space gray 42mm Apple Watch Nike Plus with the anthracite band. So just some casual observation. The Series 2 watch is so fast compared to the original. The official Apple bands are amazing. I mean, I get they're $50. People complain about them. I've got a bunch of knockoff bands. I've got a bunch of knockoff Nike bands, and now I've got the real deal, and it is so much nicer. I don't think it's worth $50 compared to like 11 or 12 on Amazon, but man, it is a really nice material that they're using. It's definitely a little bit of you get what you pay for. The battery is insane. I know Jeff got one. He can probably attest to this next time we get him on the show, but it used to be I would put my watch on and by the time I went in the morning and by the time I went to bed, I'd be, you know, like anywhere from 5 to 15, 20% battery life left. And now I've had my watch on all day. I've gone out for a run today. I'm still at 65% battery life. And that's actually kind of bad. I mean, I can easily go 2 days without even sweating charging the thing. It's waterproof. I can wear it to the pool, which is nice. It's really nice. So if you've got one of the original series Apple Watches and you've been on the fence, you know, it's a couple of years old now, I definitely can give two thumbs up to the Series 2. I know that there are rumors we may get another one, an Apple Watch 3 this fall. I think that's probably premature, definitely the spring. But if you can catch one on sale, $70 off for $329, you could do a lot worse. It is everything that the first Apple Watch should have been. If only we could go back in time. It's really nice. So that is what I love. I already had one, so nothing really new, but by golly, is it really nice and fancy. So
very cool. And I had an issue with the LG Health app.
Okay.
Where it didn't record something. One of my infrequent walking excursions, it didn't even record it, so immediately uninstalled it, put Google Fit on, and I chuckle at myself because I'm mad that it didn't record the exercise. But Jacob, what is the important thing? That I actually did the exercise. That's what the real important thing is, and yet I'm pissed off because it didn't actually record it in the app.
Here's the
How
thing.
How backwards is that?
Gamification is a very real thing. And honestly, like that day that I went and like lost half my, I was so distraught because officially on a stupid piece of software that doesn't have any bearing on reality whatsoever, it showed that I only ran for 15 minutes and not for 30. And it really upset me. And it's stupid because guess what? I ran for 30 minutes. I put in the miles. I put in the time. Got all the benefits. Nope. If it didn't record it on that stupid app, it didn't happen. And that's nuts.
I hear you.
It's absolutely nuts. But I totally get it. I totally get it. And it is a powerful thing. If that's what it takes to motivate me to go out and run is getting a little virtual trophy and a little shower of confetti on the screen when I set a new distance record or get a new time, by golly, that's I'm going to take it because that really helps. And it is, you're right, it's stupid. How did people exercise 30 years ago? What was their motivation to go out and run?
I don't know how they did it.
Did they keep track on like a piece of paper or something?
That's why they didn't live as long. That's why lifespans are expanding, because we can record it digitally now.
And I know to the hundredth of a mile exactly how far I've gone. How you know how many steps per second I'm running?
Call back that company selling you health insurance and see if they'll have Morgan record something that says, "Nice job, Jacob, on that run. You broke your former record." This is Morgan.
That's awesome. Yeah. Somebody should offer that. So I don't know. It is nuts. I'm right there with you. It's dumb that's what it takes. But by golly, that gives you a little dopamine kick. Makes you feel like you did something. If you can't post it on social media, did it really ever even happen?
Not anymore.
All right. Well, I think that's as good a place as any to wrap it up. Everybody, you have just listened to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. Sorry for the extra lengthy delay. We will get back into our regular groove. If you've got any comments, questions, rants, raves, please give us a call on our call-in comment line. That number, as always, is 317-643-1212. We listen to them all. We will address it on an upcoming show. We will even put it on the show and make you internet famous. You can follow us on Twitter at No Better Show. Visit our blog at www.nobettershow.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nobettershow. And as always, you can send email to feedback@nobettershow.com. We read them all, and we will happily mention whatever you have to say on the air as well. We love that feedback. If you like the show, please go and do the iTunes thing. Give us a review, subscribe, put a few stars on there. That helps us continue growing and finding our audience. We appreciate your time. Thank you for listening. Hopefully, now that you have listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, you know better than average as well. Have a great week, everybody.
Talk at you later, everyone.